Okay, so we're live. Welcome back to the Magic Minds podcast. I'm Matt Bourke. I got some lovely feedback about last week's show with Jenna Fitzgerald. Yeah, Jenna is just an amazing young woman. You know, she had a spinal injury, but just her resilience and her determination. She's such an inspiration. People are really taken back by her story, showing her vulnerability around her mental health and the suicide. It was just powerful. But the one thing that always stands out to me with the people like Jenna and people I spoke to in my own brain injury, that there's this built-in resilience within them, and you can really see it when something tragic like a spinal injury or a brain injury happens. It just shines through, and no matter what I think would happen to Jenna, I think she's going to do well in life. She just has that built-in resilience, which was brilliant, and it was great to share a story. I was delighted that people got in touch with me, some young women and some men, to say that they're really inspired by her story, and she was just a lovely, lovely person. Yeah, I was blown away by her story, and it was great to bring it to you guys. Okay, so on the show today, I have a friend and former colleague of mine, Dr. Sinead Lynch. Sinead is a counselling psychologist, but she came onto the show. I got in touch with her because a couple of the girls that I know from my job and outside the job spoke to me about having babies and the whole postnatal depression and feeling down. And to be honest, like anything, like any of the kind of the specialists I've had on the show, when I don't know something about it, I'll tap into resources that I might have that they might be able to come on the podcast and share some insight. So I touched base with Sinead and I said it to her that I'd be interested in doing a show on postnatal depression. And she says, yeah, I'd be interested, but what do you think about postnatal depletion? And I was like, Jesus Christ, I never heard of that. I'll look it up. So I've done a lot of reading on it, and me and Sinead were back and forth, so she decided to come on the podcast and have the chat. Before anybody runs away, and I'm not being sexist about this when I say lads, because I probably would have done it a few years ago, ah shit, they're talking about postnatal depression, pregnancy, women, babies, ah here, I'm out of here, I'm gonna bounce. Please hang on, don't run off to us yet, because we all have a sister, a girlfriend, a wife, a granny. Well, hopefully a granny doesn't have any kids lately, but you know what I mean, mothers, colleagues and work. This is really important. It's great to have education like this and to be able to understand another human being and understand their struggles. So it's brilliant to get Sinead on and talk about her own journey through her pregnancy. She just became a mum recently. Her battles with the social norms, the social pressures, you know, all the breastfeeding, you know, all the different things that come with it. And then we talk again about the postnatal depression and the postnatal depletion. So it's really insightful. I didn't know anything about postnatal depletion, you know, and it makes so much sense. From my understanding, postnatal depression is predominantly psychological, where postnatal depletion is psychological, psychosocial, physical, you know, all the other stuff. And the baby's just taken away from me. And it just kind of was like a light bulb moment. It's like, Jesus, why are we not talking about this? Just makes so much sense. So much is lost from the mother. So I thought it was brilliant to get her on, and that's the kind of stuff. So hopefully it's a benefit to man, woman and child. Everyone out there, we can learn from it. It's all about listening to understand, you know, so we can be better human beings to each other. So yeah, have a listen to the show and let us know what you think. As always, you can get in contact with me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or send an email. But feedback, please give us some feedback. We really, really enjoy it. It doesn't have to be positive. If you don't like something, let us know. If you think it's a pile of shite, just say it. I'm not in this for affirmations. I really just want to produce good podcasts, it's educational. That's something of value, and it's a rich of content. If the sound is not great, I'm not too bothered about that. But I want them to be rich in content that people can actually learn from it. Because I'm listening to podcasts now a while, and I love when I knock it out and go, Jesus Christ, that was brilliant. I never knew that. That's so valuable to me. And you can use it every day. It's great. I just think it's great about personal growth. Anyway, that's enough of me banging on. Have a great day. Enjoy the show. Okay, so we're live. Welcome back to the Magic Minds podcast. I'm Matt Bourke. On the show, I've got special guest, friend and former colleague, Dr. Sinead Lynch. Sinead, how are you doing?
Good, Matt. Thanks for having me back. Friend and colleague, that sounds nice.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm absolutely delighted to have you on the show. Guys, I've asked Sinead to come on the show today because the topic of the show today is called Minding Mum. Sinead herself is a new mum, but she's also a doctor in psychology, counselling psychology. Am I right?
That's right. Yeah. So a lot of people often say counselling psychology. So what's the difference between that and clinical psychology? And I like to say nothing. We have, you know, similar training courses. And then the difference maybe with psychotherapy is, again, slightly different training. But really, the purpose is to, you know, be there for people in distress or in need, in terms of whether it's self-awareness or maybe it's, you know, overcoming adversity or trauma. So, yeah, I work as a counselling psychologist now with Jigsaw, which is the National Centre for Youth Mental Health. So I work with young people aged 12 to 25. So although it's not exactly minding mum in that arena, I see plenty of mums who are worried about their young person.
Yeah. Now, before anybody goes and starts turning off, you know, this this episode or this show is for everyone. You know, Moiny Mum, you know, it is the name of the show, but it's about caring for a friend, caring for a family member, caring for a colleague in work, you know, that's expecting, or fathers, you know, or boyfriends, husbands, whatever. I'm sure there's lots in this. If you just care about human beings, we're going to cover some stuff today, yeah?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I think Minding Mum is a great title, but it doesn't mean that you have to either be a mum or even have to be female to enjoy what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we get into that, Sinead, give us a little background of yourself. Yeah.
Okay. I'll start kind of present and work back, because I do have a bit of a varied career. But I studied a doctorate in counselling psychology in Trinity most recently. And prior to that, I actually did a master's in psychotherapy as well. And that all kind of came about after my own loss in my life. So my mum died from cancer 10 years ago, and I had been working as a TV producer at that time. I did enjoy it, but I always was sort of searching for something more. I had studied psychology when I first left school in UCD. And after my mum died, I was like, right, I need to go back on a path of finding maybe myself. So that's when I went back and I changed career and went into psychology. And so that was kind of a turning point for me. And the most recent biggest turning point for me has been obviously having my son, Beau, who was born a year ago. So I guess between a change in career and a change in identity and becoming a mum, it's been busy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You just said earlier there you're working for Jigsaw. What's the kind of work that Jigsaw do?
So it's a service for, as I said, young people aged 12 to 25, but we're a mild to moderate brief intervention service. So what that means is we see young people who might be suffering from anxiety or finding it difficult in school, maybe feeling low in mood, maybe having lost a friend or a family person, basically going through something difficult in their life. When I say mild to moderate, we wouldn't be on the more severe end of the scale. So if someone was having thoughts of ending their life, or if they were self-harming, we wouldn't see people at that point in their life. So we aim on early intervention. So it's sort of before a problem gets really big, we want to try and help a young person, you know, earlier on. So if you're feeling kind of, oh, you know, I'm not feeling great in myself, but I'm not really sure what's going on, hopefully you can even come to us then. So it's not that you're, you know, the problem has escalated to a point of distress, where sometimes, you know, it's GP and hospitalization, but hopefully if you can actually, you know, nip a problem earlier, it's a better route. And we always say, just as long as you have one good adult, so someone you can turn to. So that's what we do, and we're nationwide. So
yeah. Is there a huge focus then, if that's a preventative measure, is the huge focus then a lot on the education of it?
Yeah, exactly. So we do lots of community work, and we go around to lots of schools, and we try to put the word out there in terms of like minding your mental health. We do lots of talks and seminars for young people, and we have young people involved in the service as well. So Jigsaw have a YAP team, which is the young people who, you know, are part of the team, and they also help promote the service. So it's
brilliant.
Yeah.
Like a peer support.
Yeah, kind of like that. Or just knowing, you know, when you're young as well, you relate to people your age. So, you know, when you're
100%.
12 to 25 and you see that there's other, you know, young people over 18 working with us, it's, you know, it's encouraging.
And you get more of a buy in.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they kind of feel, and like that, like there's a lot of, so we're transdisciplinary. So the way you even mentioned me earlier, working as your colleague, which I'm sure we'll get to, but transdisciplinary means that you don't have to just be a psychologist to work there. We have social workers, occupational therapists, but we all work in the same therapeutic modality, which is kind of one-to-one therapeutic support. But it means that we have, you know, people who are 24, just out of college, working with us. You know, it's not all oldies like myself, but
you certainly don't look like an oldie in the picture of this podcast. Will well, tell the tale.
Well, sometimes when you're sitting in front of a young person, you can feel like you're 95. But yeah, so
don't talk. I work with a girl here, and she's only 26, and I keep talking about old films or old stuff like that, and you swear I was talking about black and white telly. I was like, "You're only 26. I'm 42." But big blank face now, and she's like, "You're just like my granddad or something."
I know.
It's hard. It's hard to take.
It is. I take it on the chin though. But yeah, so it's a really, really good service, and I'm delighted to be part of it because it's growing year on year. And, you know, people might know it now, even from like we're in Lidl. So we're in the Lidl campaign. So you can see Jigsaw posters everywhere. So people are like, "Oh yeah, I saw your poster in Lidl. And so I decided to give you a ring," you know, so it's
actually a cool name. Isn't it just Jigsaw?
Yeah. So it originally started as Headstrong. With Tony Bates, who's a famous Irish psychologist. And I really liked the name Headstrong too, actually. But yeah, we changed it to Jigsaw.
Brilliant. Mm. Fantastic.
Not me personally, by the way, but just...
the service.
Yes.
You didn't just stay up one night and just say, "Hey, I'm changing your name. Let's get out the graphic design manual and start changing it."
No.
Oh, shit, that would have been better fun. So come here, look, you've had a little prince in your life.
Mm.
How has life changed for you since then? Other than you've lost your freedom. My freedom!
Do you know what, Matt, though? Like, that whole freedom part, that part is huge. I mean, like, becoming a mom, I'm really glad to do this talk here, because if I was doing this interview with you as a psychologist and I was telling you, you know, tips on compassion and different things like that, I would have a completely different mindset to the mindset I have now since becoming a parent. You know, firstly, even myself, my husband would talk about this increased empathy that we have just from becoming a parent. But that the whole change of identity, you know, I came home from the hospital and, you know, we'll talk about how postnatal depression looks, or postnatal depletion, which is more to the point of what I'd like to talk about. But if you list out any of those, you know, symptoms or signs of that, I mean, in my first 2 weeks of coming home, I could have diagnosed myself with like a postnatal depression of sorts, because that loss of identity to me, I mourned that every night, I think, for 2 weeks, where I would just be sort of sitting there tearful, waiting for my husband to come home from work. Unfortunately, he couldn't take the time like with me to, you know, sometimes men take the first 2 weeks, but we didn't have that so much. But I just was like, oh my God, my life is never going to change. Like, this is it now. I do not have my freedom. And I remember sitting with a female cousin of mine, because I have no sisters, and we both said at the exact same time, this overwhelming sense of responsibility, and this innate, you know, animalistic, primal, I need to protect my child, and this huge anxiety around that. And needless to say, I didn't have postnatal depression, and I wouldn't care if I was saying that, because I think we all feel such a huge sense of anxiety and, oh my gosh, what am I going to do with this tiny little person, and this is for the rest of my life, and oh my God, I love them so much and I'm so terrified, and all these mixed emotions. And then of course, add on top of that, absolute lack of sleep. So, you know, it's no fairground. There's the love, but in the beginning there's the complete shock as well.
Absolutely. And share a story with you. When I came out of hospital, my first daughter was born, I had this huge anxiety about, because everyone talks about this magic moment, you're gonna love this baby, it's beautiful, this. I felt nothing. I just felt scared and anxious, and I rang my mum and went, "I don't know if I love this kid. I just seen this kid crying. What do I do? Am I not gonna love this kid?" She was like, "Look, you didn't carry this kid around for 9 months, you know, that will come, you will bond, all this kind of stuff." But I was panicking.
Yeah, that's amazing that you say that though, because I think, like, hopefully that brings comfort to so many people. I mean, even for me, seeing like my husband, and also you saying you had your mum to phone. I mean, I didn't have my mum to phone. I mean, that was huge for me as well.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
I had so many female friends who were of a great support, and like, I'm still so grateful to them and to sisters and all. But I saw that in my husband. I saw him kind of like with our baby just look like, "Oh my God, what am I doing? What am I going to do?" And to be honest, I think it took months before there was the clear bond.
100%, like, absolutely, I can attach to that.
You know, he loved the baby and he did everything possible. And, you know, he is a great dad. But it's as Beau gets older, that I'm just like, right, the two of them, they're, you know, they're besties now already, kind of thing. But
I was, when I start getting eye contact, there was a response, I just felt it. I was doing all the loving things, changing nappies, being there, being present, helping as much as I could, being in the way as much as I could. But it was until I got the response, and I'm sure fathers have felt that them similar. But just touching on what you just said there, the isolation for you as in no mom, sisters, that must have been huge. And I'm sure there's pockets of people around the country in similar situations.
Yeah. And, you know, we talk about kind of this, you know, possible depression or depletion after having birth. But a lot of people can feel a lot of anxiety during their pregnancy. And generally, I wouldn't be an anxious person. And I didn't really have that much anxiety during my pregnancy. Of course, there was ups and downs where I was worried, but I didn't think very much about the fact that I wasn't going to have this female family around me. I had had, you know, I was late enough having my baby, and so I'd seen everybody else go through it, and I knew the rules of maybe don't knock on the door for the first 2 weeks, and if you're coming, bring food, and all these, you know,
brilliant,
all these things, like, you know, don't bother me wanting to see the baby unless you're going to do a job, kind of thing. So I knew all these things, but I hadn't thought about it so much for myself, only that I had a bit of meal prep done, or, you know, I knew, again, my husband had started a new job, so I knew that I had different friends who were going to call on different days, but I didn't realize how much I was going to need them. And I mean, there is that period, like, so I was in hospital for 4 days. I was lucky, that was the plan that I was kind of on, and I enjoyed that. Like, I enjoyed the support of the nurses, and so I enjoyed being in there. And then when I got home, of course, that was a reality check. And there was some of the visit in-laws and do all these things that I had vowed that I wouldn't do in the first 2 weeks. But of course, I did. And I suppose it only hit me on, I think, the first Monday that everybody went back to work, that I was like, oh, my God, like, I feel alone. And of course, I had the community health nurse calling in. But if anything, she kept showing me the, like, now, if you're depressed, these are the signs. And I kept telling her, I know, it's fine. I work in psychology. And she kept sort of reiterating it. And I felt a little bit like, does she think I'm depressed? And all I felt like I was running on was this adrenaline around again, like this primal, I must protect my son, and all I want to do is hold him close. So in a way, maybe my brain didn't have a time to process, not having a female person in my life like a mother. And at the same time, I think I was also just grateful for those that were around me. So, it was mixed. You know, looking back, I think it was definitely like I was sort of surviving through those first few weeks. And I think I look at photographs and I think I look a little bit shell-shocked. But I don't think I had given, you know, not having my mom as much thought as, you know, maybe I thought I would have, if that makes sense. Like, I hadn't dwelled on it too much.
Yeah, and probably annoying, so probably that was a better thing.
Yeah, I think it's, again, yeah, it was probably that survival mode of, like, you kind of get on with kind of what you have. And I think as well, maybe the gratitude of getting on with what I had, which was feeling really appreciative of the female people that were around me, such as sister-in-law. Like, I had a sister-in-law, and she came, and she's not Irish, and so she brought all of her traditions with, and it wasn't just the home-cooked meals, but she was bringing broths, and she was bringing, like, herbal teas and things like this that, like, I'd
fantastic
never heard of before. And she was telling me certain ways to sit and how to help my womb get back into place, and how...
That's class.
I know, and she didn't even ask once to hold the baby, which is amazing, because that's one of the things that I really, really kind of bothered me, actually. Like, I didn't want to be told, I'll take the baby, you go out for a walk. I didn't want to leave the baby, and I think a lot of women don't want to leave the baby. And, you know, sometimes we're told, oh, don't be over precious with the baby, but, like, this is what we're programmed to be and to feel. You just want to stay, hold the baby, keep the baby close. You know, the baby roars when it's with someone else, and it's like, well, yeah, because it wants to be with its mother as well. And so she came, and she had all this, like, that's cool, you know, and anything else I can get you. And I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
She was nearly giving me a massage.
And the good thing about it was about you.
Yes.
You know, the care she was given was for you. You were giving it to the baby, so that's all kosher. Yeah. But she was looking after Sinead.
Exactly.
Which is cool.
And I think that's a really important point, Matt, as well. It's that thing of, like, yeah, minding mom. It's like, you know, I remember I had so many other fellow mums saying to me, don't worry about the baby will get everything it needs from you. And I, lucky enough, I wanted to breastfeed, I was able to breastfeed, and that was all going very well, thankfully. And so, yes, the baby was actually getting everything that he needed from me. And so it was about looking after me. Baby was doing fine. And I think that's what we miss sometimes. We want to help by going straight to baby. And a lot of women talk about how when they're pregnant, all the care and attention's on them, and like, watch the lady, she's pregnant, and you check up with your GP, and you know, all this care for the mother. And then it's like this empty vessel syndrome, like when the baby's born, it's like all eyes are on the baby. And people think they're helping maybe the mother by going straight to the baby. And like I said, saying, you head off now for a coffee or do whatever. But actually that mother then, when she leaves the baby, has this heightened anxiety. And is
separation.
Like, I am not feeling any good having this coffee. Now, some mothers are delighted with that. So there is no right or wrong. But I'm just saying that a lot of the time, if we're already sort of feeling anxious, separating us from the thing that we're, you know, trying to protect is only going to make us more anxious.
Oh, absolutely. I've seen that firsthand when my second daughter was born. My mum moaned me for a few hours. We went for a curry.
Mm.
I don't think she even remembered what the curry looked like. And the place was just in, out, bish, straight back. Straight. There was no benefit. Yeah. My mum was doing a favour, and she was really, you know, fair play to her. But yeah, I can really relate to that.
Yeah, and I think, again, that's what I'm saying. I think if I was sitting here a year ago, I would have been like, yeah, and let people support you and let the mother-in-law come and do that. But I now sit in the place of, actually, I think other people have to respect that actually, and I'm not, this is not against your mom, but like other people have to respect that it's such a fine balance of helping with supporting and taking the baby, and then also then like really understanding that, you know, a mother might, as much as her identity was, oh, I loved a curry on a Saturday night or whatever it was, that's changed now. And even if they do get to go and do that, it's slightly ruined, and it takes months before maybe that can come back to feeling like, oh, deadly, now I've got my curry on a Saturday night out, you know. And I suppose that to me is just really important, that to remember that. And I remember I got involved with the breastfeeding group, which was one of the best things that I did, because it was just this Tuesday morning, we used to call it boob school, you know.
Boob school.
Learned things. Fantastic. That I never knew. I don't know why we don't get educated in this. And the whole thing was just support. You know, it wasn't, again, right or wrong, but I don't think we support Irish mums. Like, it is the healthiest thing, but I'm not going to start bashing bottle milk. I did both. But the point is that, like, it doesn't have to be this whole thing of, like, just because I think that that's right, that I therefore think that bottle milk is wrong. You know, that sort of way.
Yeah.
I just think that we don't promote what is actually, you know, more beneficial to baby and mother, like hormonally, everything. But what I wanted to say on that was the support that we got. And there was a lactation consultant, and some of the girls in the group would say, I have a mother-in-law and all she wants to do is feed the baby. And she keeps telling me things like, what are you giving them that for? You know, that's making them sick, you know, and basically talking about breast milk. And, you know, I just learned about how women in a different generation were thought, well, look, you know, bottle is best. And so it was no fault of theirs that they had that attitude, because there was a kind of elitist thing too, like it was more expensive, so you were wealthier if you were giving your children like kind of, you know, bottle milk. And so now we're all back to, let's all say, we're all hippies again now. And so she said, look, sometimes you have to say to a mother-in-law, like, or to a mother, because I couldn't, you know, me again being motherless, this poor motherless girl in this group, and some of the girls were like, oh, I have no support from my own mother. My own mother is telling me to put my breasts away, and that the milk is wrong for the baby, and they're dying to get their hands on the baby. And the consultant or the lactation consultant said, just tell them you've had your turn. And she was just so short about it, but yet so right. You know, it sounded a bit, you know, harsh. But actually, I think people come in and they just want baby time.
Yeah.
And like that, they just totally forget mum and probably forget dad altogether. But yeah.
Like from an immune system, from like...
Oh, lots, yeah.
Just straight away, your immune system is tons better once you breastfeed a baby. Now, I'm not saying for all the people that don't breastfeed that your baby doesn't have a good immune system. But no. I'm just saying, if you want to look at it for immune function,
yeah,
boom. No, breastfeeding is the key.
Like, I think that we're so afraid to say, but breast is best. And then people say, no, fed is best. And of course fed is best. But why do we have to not acknowledge the immunity that breast milk gives and how good it actually is for the mother as well, for that, you know, bonding? And, you know, and I've had friends who've struggled and then they just say, you know, yeah, you're so lucky it's worked for you and it didn't work for me and it sucks. And then I had nights where I was like, oh God, this breastfeeding, it's taking it out of me. And oh my God, I'd never heard of cluster feeding. So, you know, any of the mums out there currently cluster feeding, more power to you. Just get the Netflix on and, you know, sit on the couch and chill, because I did not. I kept going, what is this feeding about, you know? And I think that's what we do. We question ourselves and we become critical, and that's where we can feel low. But I hadn't a clue, and it all kind of worked out. But like, without support, I definitely would have crumbled a lot more than even those little times that I felt I was crumbling.
Fair play to you. Wow. How the name of the show is Minding Mum. How do we mind mum? How do we look after our sisters, our girlfriends, our wives, our auntie, our uncles, our colleagues? How do we support them?
So I always say, like, you know, being a mum or being a psychologist, it doesn't really matter. It comes down to communication, because if we can't ask a person what they need, so just that fundamental, like, what do you need? I mean, sometimes you joke in couples therapy that, not psychologists joke in couples therapy, but, you know, the joke in couples therapy is if the man just said, like, you know, what is it that you need? And the woman just said, what is it that she needed? That there would be less arguments, you know? And I think that's just true generally between human beings. It's like, if I actually knew what I needed and if I stated what I needed, it would be so much clearer. So I think it's try not to presume, you know, ask someone what is it that they would like. Try to respect the fact that it's also going to be a very kind of hormonal, emotional time. You know, take it on the chin if you get the head eaten off you, and that's either from mom or dad. Think about all the lack of sleep that new parents are, you know, well, having, not getting enough sleep, you know. So I would say, you know, communicate, ask the person what they need, be respectful of whatever answer you're going to get, be respectful even if you feel they're being a bit short or a bit snappy or whatever it is. And then just maybe even think yourself, what is it that you received? You know, I'll never forget now that sister-in-law coming and helping me like that. And as much as I might have made food in the past for people, I think I'd do it a bit more selflessly in future, if that makes sense. Like, I wouldn't be looking for anything in return. I'd just be like, right, I'll they've asked me for food, I'll just drop up that food, you know, that sort of way. And I just think, you know, compassion generally. So, you know, people often say to me, like, well, what is sort of self-compassion? And usually it's the awareness of suffering, but then wanting to end that suffering. So often people can say, oh, I'm very, you know, empathetic and I always feel for other people. But actually, sometimes they might actually be kind of pitying someone else. And it's a kind of a looking down sense. Oh, God, poor them. Lucky I'm not in their shoes. And empathy is kind of being in their shoes. And then I take compassion that one step further and sort of being actually side by side with them in their shoes and then wanting to kind of end that suffering. So the way you kind of practice compassion generally is actually more so in loving, in being loving, you know what I mean? Like, so in thinking kindly about yourself or talking kindly to yourself, instead of that self-criticism. So I think just to remember that compassionate piece whenever you're dealing with new parents.
Yeah, and they're already, like, I'm sure, giving themselves a hard time, because you know yourself, there's so many pregnancy, new baby police going around. Yeah. They have an opinion, this is the way to do it, the tyranny of should, you should do this and you should do that, and not even allowing them to make mistakes. Yeah. We're human beings, but we do still have this innate capability to look after a vulnerable little ball of joy. I mean, we might get it wrong and we might break a few things, but we won't go too wrong.
I know. I think, yeah, I hear what you're saying about the advice piece. It's a strange one. I think people obviously feel, and maybe that should go on the list as well, like, don't give advice. But I think people feel that they're helping when they give advice, and like that, you know. And I think that, geez, if my mum was alive, would she have been similar in the, like, what are you doing with the breastfeeding and why are you killing yourself? And, you know, sometimes I talk compassionately to myself, using her more compassionate voice to me, and at times that I would struggle, I'd wonder what she'd say. And around the breastfeeding piece, because it wasn't easy, yes, I did it and it worked out for us, but, you know, of course it wasn't easy. And I often thought to myself, would she have said, you know, go easy on yourself, take, you know, take it slow, or, you know, get a bottle. And they were the times that I kind of went, actually, I will get a bottle. And here, handed it over to the husband and said, right, I'm going to go for a kip for 4 hours, you know. And I mean, that was my 4 hour sleep that night. But,
wow.
You know, so it's actually, yeah, not being a prisoner to your own mind, not listening to, as you said, the shoulds, like, well, I should be doing it all this way, or, you know, I should, whatever else. So
it's really giving yourself an internal hug and saying, you know what, you're doing the best you can do.
Exactly.
It's lovely that you said that, you say things in your mom's voice.
Yeah, I do. So that's one of the things that I'd often say to people, like, a really nice way to elicit self-compassion, like, to get it going, because people would say, okay, so, like, come on, how do I actually start practicing this? And I'd be like, well, you know, you don't have to tell me your pet name, but did anyone ever call you something that was really loving, that made you, as soon as you say it to yourself, you're like, yeah, no, that brings a whole sense of love to me. And then I say, right, well, then use that name. And then I want you to talk to yourself kindly with that name. So, you know, I don't mind, like, she had various different names for me, but, like, my name's Sinead, but she often called me Nade or Nadine. And so sometimes it would be like, you know, go easy on yourself, Nade, or, you know, go to bed and let Frank do it, Nade, or, you know, just whatever it was, very motherly voices. And I think, you know, that's what it is, that mums, and there's a center in New York that does just this, that basically mothers, you know, basically, you know, rallies them in, takes them in with all this anxiety that they feel after having a baby, all the struggles that they're going through, all the depletion in terms of their, you know, energy and vitamins and nutrients, and basically just mothers them and guides them and gives them what they need.
That's beautiful. That's like it's like the kindness meditation, you know, Jack Kornfield.
Mm.
He talks about that, you know, if you want to give yourself compassion, think of somebody in your life that you really love and hear them say to you, I wish you well, I give you kindness, and that's fantastic. If people could do that a little bit more, it'd be deadly, wouldn't it?
I think when you already have the name, or you already have the thing that, you know, whoever it was said to you, then it's sort of nearly ingrained, it's already a narrative that's there in your mind.
Or even a picture of your daughter or your son looking back at you, giving you kindness.
Yeah.
That's a fantastic tip. I hope people catch on to that. What are some of the signs, the warning signs that we could pick up on, you know, if somebody is struggling?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I want to be serious about this, but at the same time, I'm kind of maybe controversial in how I describe, like, what can be depression for people, because I understand that a lot of people feel depression comes on them, comes out of nowhere, there's no reason for it. I guess my philosophy is I always feel there's a reason for it, and someone might say, well, why, nothing's traumatic's ever happened to me, or nothing bad's ever happened to me. But, like, if someone is a constant critic to themselves, you know, that's basically berating themselves constantly in their mind that they're never doing enough, you're not going to feel good about yourself, you're not going to feel good, you're going to feel depressed. So with, say, something like postnatal depression, like, the way I view that is a depression, but after giving birth, you know? So as in, for example, it's all the signs of depression, but it's postnatal, it's after giving birth. So people would expect maybe a new mum or a new parent to be all full of the joys. And, you know, there's often that sense of elation when you first had the baby, and then maybe 4 or 5 days later, there's that drop and I can't even remember the phrase now about the tears, but it's like day 4 or something like that, all the tears come. And you know, again, that's probably very hormone related, but we don't see postnatal depression as being maybe hormone related. But depression even generally is a sort of a low energy. And this is where I'm like, what parent doesn't feel these things? So let's, again, not be maybe labeling them, but rather just being like, of course, you know, that this is a possibility. It's like low energy, tired, feeling really lethargic, maybe not feeling motivated, either oversleeping or undersleeping, which, you know, in the beginning for parents, it's probably undersleeping, and possibly, you know, a change in appetite, either overeating again or even undereating, not eating at all. And this has to kind of go on every day for 2 weeks. And that's usually when someone's going to their GP, when they feel, okay, actually, am I suffering from depression? And so for someone after having a baby, postnatal depression typically is kind of 6 weeks, maybe, that later that the person feels, actually, is this the onset now of a kind of a postnatal depression? And so it's definitely a serious thing. People have it, but I guess And so people should go straight to their GP whenever they're concerned about anything. That's always just the protocol. Just go straight to your GP and have a really honest discussion if you can. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, we're all going to feel like that at times. And maybe not criticizing yourself for feeling that way in itself is a huge step. Or maybe not saying what, why, and where is it coming from? And, like, I've just had a baby. Like, why am I happy? Like, all of that, again, is, like, critical thinking. So, again, it's just kind of like, of course, I had like 4 hours sleep last night. The night before was interrupted constantly, broken sleep. I'm all over the place. My body's not what it used to be. My identity is all over the place. You know, it's so much to juggle.
Of course, and so many contributing factors to it, you know, and they just think the baby is the solvent of it all, that this will cure all my problems, and it doesn't.
No.
And that then itself becomes a cycle.
Yeah, because maybe there was prenatal depression, do you know what I mean? Maybe, and the same with the anxiety, like, so we don't talk about postnatal anxiety that much, but like there is that postnatal anxiety. And just briefly to kind of talk about like what anxiety is, it serves us such a great purpose. It's there to protect us, you know. We kind of know, we talk about it so much more these days, but it's just biological. So in your brain, it's kind of like, oh, I'm in danger. Your body reacts, you feel anxious. And if you were in danger, your body would protect you. The problem is that we overthink now, maybe. We worry ourselves. We're thinking into the future. That's what's causing anxiety. That's what making us feel panic, giving us panic attacks. But like that, I really go back to that kind of animalistic, like, if you've just had a baby and it's this very small creature and it's your job to keep it alive, you are going to feel great anxiety. So if you're constantly saying, like, what's wrong with me and why am I feeling this way and why am I not, you know, that's again all criticism. That's not going to help you, or I suppose help your baby.
And it feeds that loop.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
That worry after worry, and then it becomes that, exactly, like OCD, worrying about worrying. And
yeah, and it can develop into lots of different things. But also, like, there's, you know, Winnicott came up with, like, you know, good enough parenting, like the good enough mother. And that's just it. It is, like, it's not just saying, oh, sure, I'll do my best, but actually I think I'll head out for 6 points tonight and sure, that's my best. It's more, no, actually, it's a recognition of, today was also a really tough day. You know what, I didn't maybe do all the things that I could have done, or I didn't have as much patience as I would have liked, or actually I had to drop all the meal prep that I wanted to do. But you know what, I was good enough. I was a good enough mum today. So
fantastic. We've touched on postnatal depression, okay? Mm. But something that you shined a light on for me was postnatal depletion. And I'm not minimizing postnatal depression, but I think this is huge. From all the reading I've done on this, it's a huge piece.
Yeah, and again, I think it's that it's so common, but we didn't know, we didn't put a name in it. So there's an Australian doctor, Dr. Sarilac, who kind of nearly maybe coined the phrase in a way. He's written a book on it, and it was after kind of 6 or 7 years of in his own sort of practice, and also his wife and their family, and seeing it, that he discovered actually that women up to at least even 7 years after having a child had this depletion. And again, similar symptoms. It's like kind of, you know, waking and feeling completely depleted already, like you've never even slept for, you know, 7 or 8 hours. It's again having no energy, so a real deep lethargy. It's really like, oh god, like I have no motivation. You know, it's that brain fog that we often talk about having a baby. And that's another thing, you know, this change in identity, this, you know, I find it for myself. It's like I'm sitting there and I'm like, no, that's not the word that I wanted to use. Like, where has my vocab gone?
And
it's gone.
And people say, oh, that's just baby brain, baby thing. But from my reading, during that pregnancy, you lose 5%, or your brain shrinks 5%.
That's great news.
I'm sure you get it back. I'm sure you get it back. Just eat lots of brain food, eat lots of high fat foods, and hopefully that'll come back.
I know. No, of course. And it's also, again, it comes back to this tiredness thing. Of course, if we're tired. But I actually was only talking about this recently. I was like, God, we must look into it. Are there studies out there where, you know, does the language part of our brain get, you know, affected more so or something? But, you know, all these things where it's like you feel forgetful, and then you could even be sensitive to things, like sensitive to light, sensitive to, you know, daytime a bit. So it's, What he discovered is that women were feeling this way for, you know, up to 7 years afterwards. And so he was looking at it holistic, like you said earlier. I'm not a nutritionist, but he was looking at it from, okay, what is your body actually depleted in? And he was noting things like, you know, omega-3 fatty acids, or vitamin D, or zinc, and iron. It was always so important during pregnancy. So he was saying, right, medically, I need to like help you back up with some of this. We also need to look at what your diet is generally. Like, are you eating foods like, again, bone broth is quite popular, and just really good earthy broths, food that's like, you know, cooked already, so it's easier to digest. And not only that, but then also like, well, how are you mentally? Like, what, you know, was there anything that you kind of went through that you've sort of just bulldozed through since, you know, as in, for example, so because I said I was later having a child than my friends, I was talking about how, isn't it mad that you have a baby? It's a huge medical procedure, whether it goes well for you or not, you know, whether it's natural or C-section, whatever it is. The point is, it's a big medical procedure. And then you're like, see you in 6 weeks. You know, it's like the focus goes back onto the baby, and you see your GP in 6 weeks, and you're like, yeah, now my pelvis or my hips or my coccyx or whatever it is, it's still a bit sore, you know. And you're saying this to your GP, and they're like, yeah, that's kind of normal, but actually my GP was great, and she said, you know what, I'm sending you to a physio who deals in exactly this stuff, you know. It's like, I felt like female physio ward. And I went, and we were doing lots of different exercises, and it was amazing. And it was lots of pelvic floor and lots of stuff that, you know, again, you haven't a clue about before you've even had a baby. And I was telling a friend of mine, and she has a 6-year-old, and she was like, yeah, I'm still a bit sore. And I was like, go to the physio, you know.
Yeah.
And like that, she just said that came down to that at 6 weeks. It came down to, look, at her 6-week checkup, her doctor was like, that's normal. You're going to feel a bit sore around your pelvis. And that was the end of that. So, yeah, so basically he looked at this like holistic way of, right, we need to like let people know that this actually occurs. And again, he also says, like, he recommends for his patients that they wait at least 2 years between having children. And I can really understand that. And in today's society, it's kind of like, when are you going to have the next one? Especially me, I'm 40. And so it's like, are you having another one? When are you going to have the next one? Or you want to have the next one now? And it's like, maybe I just want one, maybe I'm happy with one, I don't know. But also
societal pressures and expectations is desperate.
Yeah.
What I found interesting about that doctor was the pillars that he talked about, as you said, the nutrition, sleep, movement, purpose, social.
Yes. Creativity and purpose, I love that.
Yeah, like you lose your sense of purpose, like you lose the I.
Yeah.
Now I'm a mum, I've lost I.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
And people like, well, the people think, oh, that's only for hippies and yoga dudes. Yeah, it's a huge piece, like your identity.
I remember running into an old friend, and I said, yeah, I guess I'm just kind of like, you know, I'm going to be going back to my job and all, but I feel like I'm back in this, like, you want to call it existential, or I'm back in this place of wondering about life. And, you know, this baby has brought me so much new meaning, but, you know, what's my purpose? And he turned around to me and he was like, your purpose is the baby. Like, it's, you know, it's great, that's your purpose. And you know, I went away and I thought, that was very nice of him, that was very sweet. And then I was like, no, he didn't get me at all. Like, I, of course, that's my major and number one in my life, like, but it's not all of who I am. And
you can't dual role. No.
And so I think I love that part where he's basically saying, like, find your bliss, find your joy. And I think for a lot of people, they need that outside. And then, you know, there's the guilt if they go looking for it, or there's the guilt if they particularly enjoy their work. And then for other people, there's like, no, actually, you know, this is enough and it's my bliss. And, you know, so there's never, ever a right or wrong. But I think that's what brings us on different paths. There's, you know, the people feeling postnatally depleted, depressed, anxious, all of us feeling probably mixtures of that, and then maybe more severe cases. But all of it is okay, I guess, you know, and all of it is both individual and, you know, the common whole. Like, we are all actually exactly the same. So I think I'm trying to say, if there can be a more general acceptance or allowance of individual experience, it's actually, it's for the greater good.
Yeah, I seen the postnatal depression and the depletion. I was looking at the bottom. I just felt that the postnatal depression was very psychological driven.
Yeah.
I just felt the depletion was, let's say, let's give you an analogy, that this baby is like a charger of a phone just plugged into you, and he's just zapping everything out of you, whether it be the zinc, iodine, all these kind of things. And it's just a blind spot for mum. They're just not even thinking of that. And I'm thinking, it's so obvious that this baby is just draining you socially, emotionally, physically, everything.
Meant to be, yeah, yeah. And it's not...
And it's too white and fluffy for people to grasp, but I get it. I just think that's a huge beast.
Well, I think maybe even when you say it there, maybe it is my instinct, but I'm going to try and step away from that. But my instinct is to kind of go, oh, no, it's not that the baby does that. Let's not blame the baby. And of course, that's not what you're doing, but I think that's what people feel. They feel like, well, God, I can't say that. Because if I say that, then I'm admitting defeat. Or if I say that, like, I'm a terrible person or I'm a terrible parent.
I'm just looking at this as a physiologist, and I'm thinking this baby is just draining from it. And my voice then to stop that would be just refuel, educate mom and say it's okay to look after yourself, because then you're looking after in service of the child.
Yeah. And I think that's, I mean, I think when you say, you know, it's not necessarily stopping it, as you said, it's like refueling it. So it's not that you are going to not do it. It's just that you have to realize that you have to, you know, using your analogy of the power and the battery, you have to charge up again, you know.
And then it'd be in benefit for the kid. Mm-hmm. Was it something that you were mindful of, though, as an expecting mum? Was your nutrition on key? Was that stuff that you paid attention to?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I would be kind of healthy, I guess, to an extent, in that while I'm vegetarian, and I mean, I love animals, but I also, I don't think that there are benefits in meat. I say to the very buff bodybuilder across from me,
shut up.
But no,
I just work on my disco muscles.
But so I mean, I would just be of that mindset that just, you know, I don't eat meat. So I would have had to be really aware of my iron, especially when I was pregnant.
B12s.
Yes, exactly. So they were things that I'm kind of aware of anyway. But even now at the moment, you know, January, a year on from having the baby, and I find myself, you know, I returned to work at 9 months, was breastfeeding, still I'm breastfeeding, but like, so I'm aware of hormones. So I'm a little bit like, okay, what are the supplements that I'm going to go get? What am I going to take? What tonics do I need? Cause it's winter, like as in like a Floridex or whatever it is from the chemist. So I'd be really good at that. And I always try to make myself, again, like I wouldn't maybe go down the bone broth route, but I'd go down to like the brothy kind of soups, and then try to do that quite often in the week too. I definitely fall down though on the personal exercise, like there's walking in there, but I definitely have fallen down on, like, you know, I was never really a gym buff, as you know, but like just maybe going and doing the sports that I would have enjoyed. So I actually after Christmas, not New Year, but just after Christmas, I decided, actually, you know what, I'm going to get back to the bit of running or whatever it is that makes me feel like I'm in my body. So not anything for the glutes and the squats and all the rest of it, for the appearance, but more so for the, you know what, when I went out running and there was the air in my lungs and I was, you know, free from pram or, you know, bassinet or whatever, I was like, wow, I'm actually back in my body. And that felt brilliant.
That's a great point. And people always look at me when I say this. I'm not a big exercise advocate. Like, I love exercise for me, but I don't tell people to rush off and do it. Just like what you said, find something you love. Is that painting, gardening, whatever? Yeah, there is great benefits to exercise, but there's also great benefits to finding something that you absolutely love and getting that space between your thoughts. And
yeah, definitely, exactly. It's that finding your bliss. It's just being caught up in the moment, in the flow, they call it, like, where it's just, you know, absolutely, I forget time, space, everything. Really helps with anxiety, really helps with just promoting good mood. So you're right with postnatal. I think what this doctor had discovered was actually it's the whole package. Let's look at the whole package. And I think similar to that center, the kind of the Minding Mother Center in New York that I described as well, that's a similar thing of, you know, this whole package of like, okay, if you're phoning your GP every day because you're worried physically, let's deal with that. If you're calling your psychologist, let's look at the mind, nutritionist, you know, and that's what they do. And I think, yeah, okay, we don't have anything like that in Ireland, but we do have support groups. We do have, you know, again, felt like a complete hippie going down to this group of mums, never knew what I was going to get out of it at all. And I definitely feel like I have, you know, friends for life in there, just from meeting and sharing stories and just knowing nearly every Monday that I was going to head down, and a Tuesday I could, like, you know, baggage all my stuff together and offload. Yeah.
I was talking to a friend of ours last night, Maggie, and I was telling her that we're going to be having this chat, and we were talking about postnatal depression and postnatal
depletion.
Yes. And she was telling me about a service or a person called a doupla.
Yeah, yes.
What a fascinating. Apparently, companies are going to be hiring these duplas.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you more about them, but I can't because, like that, again, probably was a bit unaware of like all the options that I could have had. I know that I basically had no plan. I was very much like, I'll just, like, as in, I just hoped that I would be able to give birth naturally, and I, you know, did my best until I went, oh no, is it too late for the epidural? Yeah, I'll take the epidural now, thanks. Yeah, and everything went very smoothly after that, and I was perfectly happy. But like that, yeah, no, our I have friends who, you know, used different routes like that. Yeah, like midwives and nurses and stuff who come and, like, after you've had birth, like, go straight home and get that support. And I think I had a friend in, who is Swedish, and she was just talking about how you're nearly sent home with your own private, like, midwife, and for the first while they're there looking after you and baby, and that's just part of their scheme.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, that sounds amazing. But I think it's similar to what Maggie's talking about.
Dupla.
Yeah, or doula or something.
Is it a doula? Yeah, there's no P in there. That's me and me brutal pronunciation. The inner C twang. Sure.
But again, that was because I didn't
look
at...
I Google it. It's doula. Doula.
Yeah.
Yeah, and our companies in Ireland are bringing them in for from others that are transitioning back into the workplace. They're going to bring the doula.
Oh,
doula,
wow.
Yeah, back into the workplace.
Brilliant.
Fantastic, isn't it?
It is. I think there are so many options out there, but it's like that. Don't be maybe afraid to look and to ask and to see, you know. But I also think as well, because people often say, you know, what's your plan and how do you want it to go and do you have a birthing plan? And, you know, I think that's nice to have a loose idea, but again, like, try not to have too much expectation even on yourself, you know. Like, try to, in a way, go with the flow if you can. I remember when I was pregnant and I think I was giving a mindfulness talk, and I said I was going to try and be mindful in that moment to help me through, and that I had no expectation, and I was going to try and practice that compassionate sort of voice. And basically half the audience laughed, and I was like, oh, I'm fooling myself, am I? You know, I was taking it that I appreciated that, like, half the audience were women, and they were like, yeah, you haven't a clue. But actually, I had an amazing day of, like, antenatal care with, I think her name was Margaret as well, actually. And she was brilliant. She deserves her own TV show. But she was just like, none of this screaming, none of this Hollywood movie stuff, none of this, like, just, you know, you just kind of focus, you try to breathe, and you'll get through it, and trust that. And she was just so matter of fact, and she was there with me when I was breathing and trying to get through it. Now, obviously, I decided compassionately enough that I'd done enough as well, and went for the epidural towards the end. But yeah, I couldn't have been happier with how the whole thing went, and I didn't have that expectation. I did have the movie scene though of the waters breaking. The what? that was pretty amazing.
Come here, what are the supports that are available out there for mums and families and husbands, sisters out?
Yeah. I mean, I wish I could say to you, here is a whole catalogue of places that I know, but I always just want to say to people, you know, firstly, what's your GP like? Do you feel like you can have a chat with them? And if some people kind of say, oh, it's an old fella that's been in the family for years and I don't really know him, I'm kind of like, right, go find yourself a new GP. I remember when I moved before, I found this, like, women's medical clinic, and I was like, oh, I like the sound of that. And I went and I found that, like that, I found a great GP. He was able to recommend a great physio after I'd given birth. So I always say, go and try to have that honest chat with your GP. If you feel like your GP is not listening and possibly either just saying, oh, you're fine, or, you know, try medication or try talk therapy, but not really listening to what your needs are, then change GP. But I always say, especially with mental health, go straight to your GP. I think anyone who is a new mum, I would say, you know, I'm not really a fan of social media, but I do find the Facebook groups are great. I think there's lots of, you know, breastfeeding groups, and then there's also non-breastfeeding groups, and then there's combined groups. So it's like, you know, I'm doing a bit of bottle, I'm doing a bit of breastfeeding. I'm like, join those groups on Facebook, find them, just, you know, put in a search.
Safety in numbers.
Absolutely, that's the support. And then there's also, like, you know, the whole aspect of maybe loss that comes into, like, pregnancy. And I think that, again, the support that you get in those groups, and I'm not going to throw out any names because I don't have firsthand experience of them, but I just know that actually when you go to search and you find out, and look, hse.ie is great just in general for, like, giving you tips, or any of the hospitals, like, you know, if you were looking up, actually, am I suffering postnatal? depression, you could be like looking up rotunda.ie or something. And again, don't scare yourself, because it will say things like irritable, lack of sleep, not eating much, and you're like, oh yeah, because I'm a new parent, that's why.
Yeah. Wow.
But obviously, if it's on a more serious note, if it's, you know, going on for longer than, you know, if it's happening for 2 weeks straight, and if it's going on for much longer than that, then of course, then maybe it could be more serious and you do need kind of medical attention. And that again is for a support call with your GP.
Mm. What's one of the one things that you've learned about yourself as a new mom? What's the standout things that you say, do you know what? I recognize that about myself now.
We always used to give out about my mum being the typical mum that a lot of Irish mammies get described as, which is that they live through their children, you know, and that they don't have their own life separate to their children. And the thing is, my mum actually raised me to always, you know, I was interested in tennis, and she, you know, I became a tennis coach kind of in my adolescence. It was always something that she'd say, you can fall back on that now if you ever need it, kind of thing. So she always had the, like, you know, be independent to, you know, whoever I might marry, if I married anybody. And yet we always felt that she lived sort of through us. And funnily enough, I really, really became aware of how much I was attached to Beau now. And it's funny, we're talking about minding mom and we never even talked about attachment or attachment theory. But, like, you know, attachment is that attachment, that bond that we talk about, like, with when a baby is born and mother and father. And it's very new these days to do that skin to skin, and for father to do it as well, and you know, basically place baby on the chest. But like that attachment, I was and still am, and hope I always will be, very attached to Beau. So I did find it quite difficult that other people would want to come in and hold him and tell me to go for a walk, and I was 2 weeks, you know, postpartum, and being a bit like, I don't want to go for a walk without the baby, but yet I do want to go for a walk without the baby. So I realized that I actually need to take care of myself more than I would have anticipated. I would have thought that I would be back at work at 6 months. I extended it to 9 months. You know, I thoroughly enjoy being back at work now, but I love being with him. So I think I fall into my mother's maybe pattern of that I could live through him, but I need to work on being more aware of myself. So I think that's what I've learned about myself, that I need to actually mind myself. And sometimes I turn around to my husband and I say, you need to remind me to mind myself as much as you need to mind me too, because I can see that I will fall into minding maybe baby and everybody else around me.
Wow, what I'm getting back from that is the huge awareness around it all.
Yeah. Oh, the curse of the awareness. Oh, Jesus. Ignorance is bliss.
Oh, so yeah, sometimes I say that to myself. I wish I didn't know about this shit.
I think that's what you and I used to talk about. And we'll have to say, so yeah, when I was training on my doctorate, I worked here with you, and that's how we know each other.
So we met in the National Rehab. Yeah, you were a student.
I was.
Yeah, imagine us two working together. But yeah, but I'd had amazing conversation with you and other counseling psychology students. Just
no,
about
excuse me,
no, unbelievably not. They're not on the podcast. You are no, only messing. You've just signed yourself up for another podcast, by the way. We're going to talk about attachment next time. Oh, that's great. A huge piece, isn't it? Attachment,
yeah,
like
yeah.
For all human beings, you yeah. know, we don't, you know, when we what you said earlier when we talked about it, I didn't have problems years ago. People don't even know that they have attachment issues and why they're now attached to drugs or drink or depression.
Absolutely.
There's always a root cause, isn't there? Deep down,
yeah.
Layered.
I mean, again, this is where I don't mind being open to criticism, because if we don't have, and I'm sure it's not a new thought, but if we're not open about where our thoughts are, then nothing will ever grow or develop. But I'm a fond reader of Matt Haig's novels.
Love him.
But I'm reading his is it autobiography? I don't know, but his one of, like, you know, reasons to stay alive at the moment. And I'm enjoying it, but I'm only halfway through it. And I'm really hoping that he doesn't end. And if you've read it, or if anyone's read it, I'm really hoping he doesn't end on just like, so that's it. Depression is just like a black dog that comes out of nowhere, from nowhere. Because I'll be like, no, Matt, you've labeled so much stuff that happened in your life. These are causal reasons
yeah.
for feeling low. The actual episode might come out of nowhere, like he describes in his book, and I get that. But I really hope that he doesn't finish with, and so that's it. Anyone, anywhere, potluck, it could fall on you, because I don't believe that.
Ask me, granny, that's not, I don't believe that at all. You know, there is a root cause, there's a way to everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It can be complex issue and all that. But it's getting to that.
Yeah.
And that makes it easier.
Yeah. And the thing is, and it mightn't be a huge trauma. It might be that you were bullied for one day when you were 12. But you know what? That could be it.
Yeah.
How did the rest of you develop after that? You know, all lots of different things.
Jeez, we're nearly falling down a rabbit hole here, aren't we? We're moving on. You're signing yourself up for another one. I'm actually listening to it. Well, I've stopped at the moment because of a few books on the go. Humans.
Oh, yeah, I got that for Christmas too. I haven't.
I'm listening to it on Audible.
Oh, brilliant. Actually,
it's fantastic.
Really? Okay.
Oh, it's really good. Us humans, we're bonkers. We're bonkers. Yeah. Come here. What's the one thing you would like people to take away from listening to this interview, after listening to this interview?
Hopefully they listen to the whole thing, yeah. I think I always end on this, and I think it comes back to, like, you know, Paul Gilbert, and you mentioned someone else earlier in terms of compassion, but I really think that, like, if we can grow an awareness around how we talk to ourselves, that internal voice, it doesn't mean that you have many voices going on in your mind. It's just how your thoughts are. Like, so how am I thinking about myself on a daily basis? And I'll give you an example. I was on my way here tonight, and I had spent the evening kind of, you know, getting my son ready for bed, making dinner, doing all that sort of stuff. And I felt like I didn't have as much patience that I wanted to have. And I really caught that judgment straight off. And I was like, and here I am going and talking about minding mum. Well, like, you know, I'm a bit of a hypocrite. And again, straight off, it was like, okay, I'm going to catch that thought, just become aware of it and be like, okay, well, maybe that's part of it. Maybe that is a little bit true, but I'm not going to start bashing myself over the head about that. And I knew I'd come here and I'd meet you, and that I'd feel great after chatting with you, which I do as we come to the end. And so if people can just grow in their own awareness around actually how they talk to themselves, and then maybe stop it in their track, and maybe use that, you know, compassionate tip of, like, how would someone who loves me speak to me, and use that voice of, you know, go easy on yourself.
Absolutely love that. That's really going to stick with me now through that interview that you said that, and the way you talked about your mom and having that voice. Brilliant.
Yeah. So that's what I hope people can take from it. Yeah.
Is today National Cancer Day?
It's not. It's on Monday. But yeah, cancer's, like, close to my heart. Obviously, that's what my mum died from. And, you know, I spent time working in psycho-oncology, and I'm heavily involved with the Mary Keating Foundation, whom I just love, all the women there. And so, yes, it's on Monday, February 4th, I believe. And again, a huge part of my doctorate was on the emotional side of having cancer and how to meet that emotion with compassion. So I'm a huge believer. I feel like compassion has completely changed my life, just in terms of trying to practice that self-kindness. And if it is simply just recognizing the negative critical thoughts, and sort of just allowing yourself to see the suffering and the struggling, and then saying, actually, I'm going to be a bit nicer to myself now by not talking so mean to myself, then I think that's a great thing that we can all do. And yeah, so that has changed my life, I think.
Yeah, I think my greatest success has been that self-compassion.
Yeah.
And not being that internal terrorist to myself.
Yeah.
And say those crazy, and sometimes you catch yourself going, wow, have I said this to somebody I love?
Yeah.
They'd never speak to me again.
Yeah. Well, that's brilliant that you say terrorist. That's awful. You must have been really bad to yourself.
Not anymore. Now I'm just like, I was just like this Care Bear inside me now. Just give me some eternal hugs. That just sounds weird, doesn't it? Do you know what? I said I'm going to keep this under an hour because you're such an editorial guru genius. You're from the mothership of RTE. So I was under pressure to try to keep this under an hour. And I have. I'm 57 or 58 minutes now.
Brilliant.
Are you impressed?
I am. Yeah, I suppose. Did I say that I worked as a TV producer? Sorry, there's my head.
You did earlier.
I feel like I sound like I was criticizing you by saying, keep it under an hour. But that's where that was coming from.
No, you've given me great advice. When I sent you the podcast earlier on,
when I first started
doing it, and you gave me sound advice. And I really believed it because I know how straight you are and where you shoot from. So I said, if she's going to tell me something, I'm going to listen. And
my bandy hip.
Dr. Sinead Lynch, thanks very much for coming on the podcast. I just love spending time with you, and it was brilliant the way you've just really confirmed to me how important love and kindness is, and if people can take anything from the show, it's that.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Well, thanks for having me on. It's great to see you again.
That's deadly. Thanks a lot.
Okay, so there wraps up another tremendous interview. As always, I'd like to thank my supports, Niall Riley from Rooney Media. Niall has been in the graphic design business the last 20 years and producing quality work. For the last couple of years, they've been the chief graphic design for the college prospectus at UCD. I've been using his services the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years, producing posters for health and fitness stuff, and always, always produces quality work. So check those guys out. Also, my old pal Carolyn Harvey from ISA Nutrition. For anybody interested in dropping body fat, gaining muscle, maintaining a healthy body weight, getting rid of some nutritional ailments, she's your woman. If you're also interested in competing bodybuilding competition, male or female, I would recommend her. I am currently working with Carolyn Harvey and the success has been phenomenal. I have done a review already and I plan to do more. But if nutrition and strength condition, that area is something that you'd like to get coaching or advice on, I would check it out. And the prices are really, really good. Really good. Better than a lot that's out there. So I recommend you check her out. Also, Miel Crew, Kevin Doyle, sound editing and just producing and just support. Absolutely legend, Kevin. And Miel, mate, Aaron Keogh, social media. Lads, you are brilliant. The team would be lost without you. Okay, so that just leaves me to thank my listeners, thanks a lot for listening. I will urge you, please, 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 share this with family and friends. We are on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, all the kind of podcast mediums that are out there. We're on them right the way across. We also have a YouTube channel, so check us out on that. Please go on to iTunes. Please subscribe. Please leave a delicious review. We love it. Absolutely love it. So that's all the plugging I'm going to do for this podcast. As always, I will say to you, please show yourself compassion. Please spend some time with love and kindness in your life. Because if you are kind and loving to yourself, you will project that to the rest of the world. And if we all could do that a small percentage of our day, the place would be a nice, nice place to live. Right, wherever you are in the world, mind yourself. Have a great day. Bye-bye.